Good morning and welcome to the final House Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting for the first and second deadlines. This will be the last meeting, and then we will be back into deadline three and how that affects the committee. We will have more information when we get back from the recess that we're going to have as to what and how much and different kinds of things that we're working on. Chair Kegel and I have had some very high-level discussions on some things, and we will certainly let you folks know when we know what we're going to be doing when we get back from the recess. Before that, though, we do have some an agenda before us this morning that we need to work through. And the first item is we do have a quorum. The second item would be the minutes from yesterday, Wednesday, March 25th, 2026, Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting minutes. Does anyone want to volunteer if they've read that?
Mr. Chairman.
There we go. Representative Davids moves the minutes from the 25th. Any corrections, additions, deletions? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Our first bill on the agenda today is going to be House File 4502, and that bill is going to be presented today by one of the co-vice chairs of the committee, Representative Perryman. And as she makes her way to the testifying table, I will move House File 4502 before the committee to be re-referred to the general register. Representative Perryman, welcome to the committee. I do not see any amendments to the bill. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chair.
All right, so 4502 as introduced is before us. Representative Perryman, if you will tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. Today I present House File 4502. And how many times have you heard in a bill, common sense and no cost bill? And that's what this is, a common sense, no cost bill that gives Minnesota banks and credit unions a powerful new tool to protect customers from financial fraud and exploitation before the money is gone. Please keep that in mind. Financial exploitation is a growing crisis in Minnesota. Scammers target account holders with all sorts of scams, sometimes draining life savings in just minutes. HF 4502 creates a voluntary trusted contact program so customers can designate one or more trusted family members or friends that their bank may contact if red flags appear on the account. Tess Rice, my testifier today, is MBA's general counsel and is with me today to go into more details of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Perryman. And before we get to Ms. Miller and her testimony, I just want to make sure that folks know that there is a provision in law right now that allows for persons, I believe it's over age 60, that this legislature put into place for protected persons. This just goes to from birth to age 60 to be able to provide that for all persons. And I think that this is great consumer protection, and this kind of goes along with some of the kiosk stuff we were talking about, taking care of Minnesota. And so thank you for bringing this forward. And with that, Ms. Miller, Tess, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, it's early in the morning for all of us.
My name is Tess Rice. I'm general counsel for the Minnesota Bankers Association. The MBA is a trade association that represents about 95% of the banks in Minnesota, from the largest to the smallest. Obviously, fraud is a huge problem. I don't have to tell you about that. So this bill came out of Missouri. They passed this law already as kind of a low-tech tool to get at fraud, because for banks, this is a huge issue. I heard from banks a couple days ago that they're now putting more in their fraud provisions than they are for loan loss reserves, meaning they lose more money to fraud than they do on bad loans now. So huge problem for banks, huge problem for consumers, right? Because most of the time, banks are the ones that need to cover these losses. So as the chair said, there is a law that protects vulnerable adults this way, and banks can reach out to a third person. The difference with this one is that the customer needs to authorize it in the first place. So a bank can't just reach out to anyone, you know, a family member or whatever. They're going to need the customer's permission, probably when they open the account, and for that customer to name that person. And then we can reach out to them if we suspect fraud, we can't get a hold of the customer. And that will be a good way, we hope, to stop it. So some banks are already doing this, but they're taking the risk that they could get sued for either not notifying someone or notifying a third party and the customer is upset about it, because that does happen. And so we think that this law will encourage the majority of banks to participate in a program like this, and we hope it will have some impact on fraud. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rice, and appreciate your testimony and your work on this bill as well. That is the list of people we had to sign up in advance to testify on the bill. Is there anyone present today who would like to testify on House File 4502 that is before the committee this morning? Anyone wishing to testify? Let the record show there was no additional testimony, and I'll go to member questions. Representative Davids.
Co-Chair Perriman, I really want to thank you for this bill. In my real life, I'm in the financial services business, and so I get to see a lot of things working with seniors. And I have been so impressed with when I see a red flag and we call the bank, they are on it right now and take care of it. And there's a lot of this out there, scammers all over the place. So if we can tighten it up a little bit where we have people that can be contacted that can actually make the decision, it's going to put a stop to it a lot quicker. And it has to be a trusted person, you know, family member. And so this is really a good bill, Representative Perriman. Thank you.
Other member comments, questions on the bill before the committee, House File 4502? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Perriman will give you the final word on the bill before you consider action.
Well, Minnesota has been a leader in many things, and one of them is protecting seniors and vulnerable adults. And now this bill will protect them from bank account fraud. I like the statement that my testifier said, that the banks are losing more money from fraud than bad loans. That's a pretty big statement to say. So it's a great bill, very, very common sense, and also, as you said, easy.
Very good. And with that, all those in favor of, I will renew my motion that House File 4502 be referred to the General Register. And with that, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the General Register. The next bill that we have in front of us, members, is my House File 3388. And with the indulgence of the committee, I will stay here since there's not going to be any new testimony on this. This is the reinsurance bill that we had heard earlier this session. And the reinsurance bill has two components to it. One asks the state of Minnesota to work with the federal government to procure another five-year waiver so that the state of Minnesota could consider continuing the reinsurance program at some point in the future when the current authorization expires. And it also included the financing mechanism, which is called the assessment, which is where year number two of the current reinsurance is. And we talked a little bit about that in our previous discussions. And I would like to attempt to try to get this out of the committee today to put this again as a tool in the basket for future legislatures. As I mentioned previously, in my testimony, that all four chairs and or leads from the House and the Senate, from the major caucuses, will be leaving, and I would like to build a little care package for them. Included in that care package would be the ability to apply for a federal waiver again to continue to offer the reinsurance program. And so with that, that bill is before the committee, and members, we had some really good discussion on it, and I appreciate that. And so at this time, what I'm going to do, if there isn't any other questions procedurally or technically, I'm going to want to put this to a vote of the committee, and I'm going to ask for a roll call vote on House File 3388. And with that, the chair votes aye. Oh, sorry.
She wanted discussion.
I didn't see you. I will withdraw this, and we will postpone the vote till we hear from Co-Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to recommend a no vote to my members. This is just, reinsurance was supposed to be a temporary solution, and it's turning out to be a not so temporary solution. So I suggest no vote.
Co-Chair Kegel, again, my apologies. I did not see you over there. It was not intentional. We have a very good working relationship. My members, contrary to the advice that was given by Co-Chair Kegel, I would appreciate a yes vote on this particular bill coming out of committee this morning. And with that, the chair votes aye.
Okay. Co-Chair Kegel?
No.
Co-Chair Kegel, no. Vice Chair Perryman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Perryman, aye. Vice Chair Elkins?
No.
Vice Chair Elkins, no. Representative Allen?
Aye.
Representative Allen, aye. Representative Buck?
No.
Representative Buck, no. Representative Cha?
No.
Representative Cha, no. Representative Davids?
Yes.
Representative Davids, aye. Representative Dasseth?
Dasseth votes yes.
Representative Dasseth, aye. Representative Falconer?
No.
Representative Falconer, no. Representative Finke?
No.
Representative Finke, no. Representative Jessica, Hansen. Sorry about that.
No.
No. Representative Hansen, no. Representative Heintzman?
Yes.
Representative Heintzman, yes. Representative Hewitt?
No.
Representative Hewitt, no. Representative Katizawatoon?
No.
Representative Katizawatoon, no. Representative Kreisha?
Aye.
Representative Kreisha, aye. Representative Reimer?
Aye.
Representative Reimer, aye. Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Smith, no. Representative Van Binsbergen?
Yes.
Representative Van Binsbergen, no, yes. Representative West?
Aye.
Representative West, aye. I messed this one up. This one, yeah. 10-10.
There being 10 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail and the bill does not pass. I will move House File 4106 before the committee, and I'm going to ask Representative Davids to come to the chair. And I'm going to recommend that House File 4106 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And as a part of my quick setup here for the bill, this is the exact same bill that we saw just moments ago, and it removes the assessment provisions. There's no financing, and it's clear policy that is, again, something that I want to put in the toolbox for folks on a go-forward basis. And so with that, I'm going to step away and let Representative Chair Davids fill in. I will go to the testifying table.
Mr. Chair,
thank you,
Mr. Chair.
I would also like a roll call on this one, too, please.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Chair O'Driscoll has moved House File 4106. So we have the bill before us. Is there anyone? We have several folks who would like to testify on this bill. But if you could make an opening statement, please, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I think the statements I made as I brought the bill before us and I handed the gavel to you clearly explains it. But just to summarize for folks again, this is the same bill that we saw in the 3388 less the assessment or financing provision. It is strictly the request from the state of Minnesota to the federal government for the 18052 waiver that allows us to be able to have the reinsurance program in the state of Minnesota. We've done it twice before. We feel confident that the feds will continue to allow Minnesota the extension of the reinsurance program under the 18052 section in the U.S. Code. So I think that we'll be okay if we just pass the policy language, giving that tool for the 27-28 legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have several people have signed up to testify. Abby Loesch, Education, Workforce, and Health Policy Director, Minnesota Business Partnership. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Abby Loesch, and I'm the Health Policy Director at the Minnesota Business Partnership. We are an association representing Minnesota's largest employers, companies that employ one out of every six Minnesotans, and we are in strong support of House File 4106 to ensure Minnesota continues the premium security plan by requiring the state to secure the federal waiver necessary to keep it in place. With the funding mechanism adopted in 2025, this creates long-term market stability while preserving flexibility for future legislatures to pursue additional cost control strategies. This is a straightforward but important action. Failure to secure this waiver will drive health costs higher across Minnesota and undermine the state's economic competitiveness. The premium security plan has been one of the few proven tools to stabilize the individual market. By leveraging federal funding to offset high cost claims, it has reduced premiums, limited volatility, and helped maintain insurer participation. That stability matters not only for individuals purchasing coverage, but for the broader healthcare cost environment that employers operate within. Allowing the waiver to lapse would reverse that progress. Premiums in the individual market would rise, cost shifting would accelerate, and pressure would build across the entire system, including employer-sponsored coverage. Minnesota employers are already managing significant increases in healthcare costs. Removing a key stabilizing mechanism would only intensify those pressures. At the end of the day, this is about predictability, affordability, and competitiveness. This bill doesn't create something new. It simply ensures we don't lose something that is working. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you. Mr. Cotter. Healthcare and Commerce Policy, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Chair Davids, Chair Cagle, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jonathan Cotter, Director of Healthcare and Commerce Policy with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, which represents 6,300 member businesses and mostly medium and small employers. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 4106, which ensures Minnesota can continue accessing federal approval for its reinsurance program. Minnesota's reinsurance program was created in 2017 in response to a severe period of instability in the individual health insurance market. At the time, premiums were projected to increase between 50% and 66.8%. Reinsurance was designed to stabilize that market and help bring premiums down, and it has done so with remarkable success. Today, the individual market continues to play an important and evolving role. It provides coverage for self-employed Minnesotans and early retirees and is becoming an increasingly important option for employers and their employees. Many employers are using defined contribution arrangements, such as health reimbursement arrangements, to help workers purchase coverage in the individual market. In any given year, roughly 5% of our members already provide coverage this way, with additional employers considering it as healthcare costs continue to rise. These trends underscore the importance of maintaining a stable and affordable individual market in Minnesota. Reinsurance has been a key part of that stability. The Department of Commerce estimated that the program reduces premiums by about 20% compared to what they would have otherwise been without the reinsurance program. However, more recently, the department indicated that extending the program in 2025 reduced premiums in the individual market by approximately 47% heading into plan year 2026. This bill ensures that Minnesota retains the authority to continue operating the program by maintaining authority for the Department of Commerce to seek the needed federal waiver. This step is essential. Without renewal of the federal waiver, the state risks creating avoidable uncertainty in the individual market going forward. While broader questions around program funding may continue to be discussed this session, preserving the state's ability to access federal support is a necessary first step. Absent this authority, the state would be unable to pursue continuation of the program regardless of future legislative decisions on funding. Minnesota's reinsurance program reflects years of bipartisan work to stabilize the individual market and keep coverage more affordable for Minnesotans. House File 4106 helps ensure that work can continue. Thank you, and we respectfully ask for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Cotter. Any member questions for Mr. Cotter? Anyone else in the audience wishes to testify?
Does the department wish to weigh in? Just any questions for the department? Or do you want to make a statement, or you don't have to? But you can. Okay. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to again emphasize the fact that this reinsurance is supposed to be something that was a stopgap. And we do have a study that's going to be coming out that looks at different finance mechanisms for our healthcare system. And the waiver doesn't run out until 2028. And so I would just recommend that we wait until we get that study so that we can actually address the healthcare costs in our state. And so thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. Any questions, Representative Van Rensburgen?
Yeah, could Mr. Cotter come back up? I had a question of him. Sorry.
Okay, Mr. Cotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Cotter, or Van Rensburgen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just go back over, you used the 20% and the 47% number. Can you just clarify so everybody understands exactly what you're meaning with those two numbers as far as premium goes?
Mr. Cotter.
Mr. Chair and Representative Van Binsbergen. Yes, so historically the reinsurance program has reduced premiums in the individual market by 20% of what they would have otherwise been had the state not set up the reinsurance program. Due to a variety of factors, including federal funding and market dynamics, last year the Department of Commerce indicated that premiums were 47% lower in the individual market than what they would have otherwise been had we not passed reinsurance.
Thank you.
Representative Van Rensburgen.
Thank you, Mr. Cotter. It is clear to me that this program has been a huge success, and we've got Minnesotans across this state in all of our districts screaming to us about health care costs and asking us what, as legislators, we are doing to help bring down costs for moms and dads and businesses and families and senior citizens across this state. Here is an opportunity for a program that's working, and as you can see by the reduction in premiums, I just appreciate this bill and appreciate your work on it, Representative. Thank you.
Representative. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for bringing this bill forward. It's the annual fun time where we talk about reinsurance and the merits of the program and the ways that we can maybe improve the healthcare situation for families across the state in a different way, potentially. And I think that given what Chair Cagle had said about the program not actually, the waiver not running out until 2028, and the legislature needed to kind of consider what will be in this upcoming report, although it has been a successful program, you know, just yesterday we had insurance companies in before us talking about how they are taking liberties, in my opinion, to interpret state law in a different way in order to cut the services that they're providing to their members. I don't think that we need to take action on this today, and I think that we really need to do our due diligence looking forward at if this is really what we want to do for the folks of Minnesota. So although I have supported reinsurance in the past, and I'm open to continuing to support it with parameters in the future, today will be no vote.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Vice Co-Chair Elkins had his hand up. You might not have seen that.
Oh, I did not see it. Representative Smith.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. Thank you, Chair. I agree with Chair Cagle that I don't think this is of necessity here. I just want to answer that yes, we are hearing from people all throughout the state and our different constituencies that they are struggling with health care and they're concerned about the rising costs of premiums. We have all had those discussions, but I would challenge anyone on this committee and in this body, in those conversations, to answer the way to keep down health care costs is to take a lot of money and give it to health insurance companies for their largest costs. And that money is money that the state could use elsewhere, but we are just going to give it to health insurance companies. I think all of our constituents would say, at the very least, there has to be a better way than that to deal with health insurance costs. And so, Chair knows I'm not a fan of reinsurance generally. I just don't think that giving more money to health insurance companies is the way to keep insurance more affordable. In fact, I think it's the opposite way, getting these large health insurance companies out of the healthcare business. Thank you, Chair.
Chair Driscoll?
I believe Representative Elkins had it.
Representative Elkins. Well.
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay. Okay, Representative Cagle, would like to, Chair Cagle, would like to wrap it up for the second time?
No, that was
fine. You can. If you'd like to wrap it up, Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, there is absolutely no reason to be afraid or fear success. That's what we've had with this program. And there's no guarantee that if you vote yes on this program, that it will be extended. There is no guarantee that if you vote yes or no on this, that it will be extended. It is me leaving this committee, leaving this legislature, with my 16 years of experience on here, to give you all who are planning to come back the tools necessary to be able to continue to have a program that has been successful in meeting the needs of a very, very important market here in the state of Minnesota. Let me tell you what it's going to look like, all right? It's sort of like It's a Wonderful Life, right? The story of George Bailey. And when you talk about the story of George Bailey, they showed you what the community would have been like had Mr. Potter run the place. Well, it's the same kind of a situation here. You're going to be spending money, a lot more money, in public tax dollars if this program goes away, because there will be no insurance that people can afford. And all the lofty goals and wishes and intentions of adding on additional mandates means absolutely nothing when you can't afford anything. And so the reinsurance program keeps insurance affordable for folks. Right now, there is just short of a crisis, and you can see the clouds gathering on the horizon, where some of Minnesota's largest medical institutions, two of them located, one in Ramsey County and one in Hennepin County, as well as Fairview and others who are trying to grab lifelines because they're having to pay for uncompensated care, absorbing that inside their budgets. What is uncompensated care? It means when you present yourself at the emergency room at the hospital, you're going to be treated. And being treated is a good thing. But if you had an insurance contract and you went to your clinic, you'd be treated as well at a lot less cost if you had your insurance coverage. You and I are going to end up paying a lot more for fewer people if we don't continue this program, or at least leave this tool on the table for folks. So again, I will disagree with my co-chair, Cagle, and say that I would like members to vote yes on this for the continued success in the state of Minnesota and the underlying benefits it gives by not strapping our uncompensated care that will increase and skyrocket and spiral. You could end up finding yourself in a special session to deal with hospitals across the state closing. I'm offering you an opportunity to be able to balance that and to keep stability in the market. And with that, Mr. Chair, again, I'd like a roll call on the bill.
You will have a roll call. And Chair O'Driscoll, I just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward, for trying to help out the next legislature, because it's going to be a very different place a year from now. And this would give a new legislature a strong start, if you will. So, with that, the chair's request a roll call. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Mr. Chair, I will renew my motion that House File 4106 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Very good. You've heard the motion. We'll have a roll call.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Chair votes aye.
Chair Cagle.
No.
Vice Chair Perryman.
Yes.
Vice Chair Elkins.
No.
Representative Allen.
Allen votes yes.
Representative Buck.
No.
Representative Cha.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Dotseff.
Dotseff votes yes.
Representative Falconer.
No.
Representative Finke.
No.
Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Heitzman.
Yes.
Representative Hewitt.
No.
Representative Katizawatun.
No.
Representative Kresha.
Yes.
Representative Reimer.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Van Binsbergen.
Yes.
Representative West.
Aye.
There being 10 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chair, I hope our, as of this opening day for the Minnesota Twins, that they have a better record today than I have so far.
They have a better pitcher.
Mr. Chair, I think we all
Chair
hope
Cable.
That.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
All right, our next bill on the agenda today is House File 400, and as Representative Perryman is making her way to the testifying table, this again is the cleaning up of some existing business that the committee had. It's House File 400 that deals with defrayals. There is no immediate cost to this. This is in anticipation of being able to help keep insurance premiums affordable for individuals when we have new state mandates that go on by requiring the state of Minnesota, if it, as the state, believes that these are important mandates that people should have and access to some specified health care options for all, that the state of Minnesota stands behind that, in fact, that they will pay for the increased cost in premiums, keeping it affordable for the public, basically the group that we were talking about with the waiver that we were speaking about in the last two bills. And so with that, Representative Perryman, again, I will renew my motion that House File 400, which the committee had lots of discussion on and testimony earlier in the session, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and Chair Cagle and Chair Driscoll and members. There is an oral amendment, Chair Driscoll, that I'd like to call out and ask our Lori Ann Pampuch. I've been with you a long time. I never pronounced your last name. So she has an oral amendment for us.
I will then go to Ms. Pampuch for the oral amendment. Ms. Pampuch.
Chair and members, you can always just call me House Research, and that will work just fine. We have a technical amendment because last year a subdivision 6 of section 62J26 was already passed into statute. So this will need to be subdivision 7. So the oral amendment is page 2, line 3, delete 6, insert 7.
So again, the motion is on line 2.3. And Ms. Pompu, correct me if I'm incorrect on this. We're changing subdivision 6 to subdivision 7 in that section. I will move the oral amendment to get the bill in the form that the author likes. All those in favor of the oral amendment changing subdivision 6 to subdivision 7 so it's consistent with state statute, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. To the bill as amended, Representative Perryman.
Thank you. You members, you have heard this a couple of weeks ago, so this is just for me icing on the cake to give my one more shot of understanding House File 400 and what it will help our total state about. It is bipartisan support, so an issue because I want to thank the authors on this bill, Reps Hewitt, Dossett, Doris, Norris, Myers, and Davids. I thank you for supporting me in this endeavor to defray costs for insurance. And on the senator side, it's carried by Senator Nick Frentz and Senator Doms. So I just want to say we can't control everything in legislature, even though we try, but we can control whether or not we contribute to making health insurance more expensive for farmers, daycare providers, small business owners, our total community. So with that said, I don't really want to go in more that I've said, which is costs are falling on struggling Minnesotans already. And we know that healthcare costs are driven by many variables, and F-400 addresses one area squarely within the legislator's control, and that's the creation of the new benefit mandates. Minnesota currently has the second highest number of state-required mandates in the fully insured market. Many were enacted for important reasons, but each new mandate increases premiums for employers' employees. HF 400 does not prohibit legislature from adopting additional mandates. Instead, it provides that if we choose to enact a new mandate, the state will cover the share of the costs that otherwise would be shifted into directly onto premium payers. I just want to call out one example that's recent about unfunded mandates. You have heard concerns about costs of unfunded mandates on local governments and on schools. Property taxes are increasing as well. There was a news article Wednesday that the Anoka-Hennepin School District will be laying off 75 staff due to increased costs. It is no different than mandates on health insurance. Just like schools and local governments can't absorb unfunded mandate costs, mandates on health insurance are paid by those who buy the insurance in their premiums. So with that said, I've done my duty to kind of bring up some other things to all of us here as you make a vote. One thing I would like to call out is the reason, Chair O'Driscoll, we're moving this to Ways and Means. I would like a roll call, and I wanted to explain that I would love this to go forward because I'd like to take it further and let the whole body of legislature vote on this since it involves and affects every Minnesota in Minnesota. I believe that all of the legislature should vote on it as well. So that's the path I wish for it to go, and that's all I really have. I do want to say one last thing. I do understand mandates are needed to help Minnesota. That is not what I'm talking about here. This bill is to keep legislature from getting comfortable with passing mandates and requirements and leaving someone else to pay for it. So please consider moving this the journey I have and that to Ways and Means so we can hear it as a whole body and vote on it as a whole body. Thank you.
We did have extensive committee discussion, but I will entertain if there are any committee questions. And I know Chair Cortez-Watoon has a question, and now we have Representative Hewitt following her.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't mean to start a trend.
Trendsetter.
Representative Perryman, thank you for bringing this bill. I think it's definitely something that's important to consider. I am wondering, because I know that right now when we in this committee consider individual mandates, we do have the opportunity to assigned to frail within those individual pieces of legislation. When we look at something like this, has it been a part of the conversation to maybe require some an additional report from the insurance companies? One of the things that I struggle with when we consider the per member per month cost estimates of some of the mandates that we have passed previously is whether or not they impact the ongoing cost of care. So, you know, when somebody can go in and get a breast mammogram and early detection of breast cancer, does that ultimately, and I think physicians would argue yes, save costs down the line? Because we're potentially interacting with that diagnosis before it gets too severe. And so I think that that's something that is maybe worth exploring to allow the health plans to give us some additional feedback on potential cost savings of some of these mandates. And I just wonder if maybe there's a place for in this legislation some sort of report. If we were to move forward with an entire coverage of defrayal for mandates here in Minnesota, that we may want some additional information from the insurance companies.
Representative Perryman.
Chair, and thank you, Representative. I'd like to phone a friend, if possible, from
Yeah, again, we were not going to be spending a lot of discussion time on because this is actually the third time.
I'll answer it the best I can.
This biennium that we've had this bill before us. So
I understand. So I'll answer it the best I can, and that's where I was saying I'm not saying all mandates are bad. The ones you called out, it is. I like the idea of oversight. That's what we, stay away from fraud by oversight. But I don't have the direct answer of what kind of reports are going on now. I'd love to continue this conversation, and maybe it'll a question I could prepare for Ways and Means as we move it there. But I understand. I really do, and I appreciate the question. Thank you.
just my quick thoughts on it is, Representative Katizawatuna, I don't think we disagree that some of the mandates that are in there are important. It's if, again, it's if the policy and the premiums become unaffordable, whatever benefits are in there, if you don't have the coverage, you don't have the health access to the health care. And I think that this also is something that helps us to be able to accomplish some savings by the state making sure that premiums stay balanced and that the coverage is in there. But that if the state feels it's important, then the state's protecting future spending of tax dollars in other ways, very similar to what I think the previous bills were looking at doing as well. I think we're all on the same page, just no matter how we get to that center of the ice here. With that, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Perryman. I've always really appreciated this part of the ACA, of the essential benefit plan, because I dealt with this before I was a legislator in the healthcare world. When somebody buys a policy, it's actually a policy. It's not this is left out. And I know that maybe others on the other side of the aisle disagree that you should be able to pull certain things out of a policy because you don't need them or whatever. But every time I think I'm reminded that insurance is a pool. And that, yep, you're paying for something that you'll never get, but they're also paying for something that happens to you. So I'm intrigued by this bill. That's why I'm on it. So I look forward to seeing what happens here. I thought it was going to be laid over today, but we'll get to the vote here soon. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Any other member questions before I go to Chair Kegel for final comments? Chair Kegel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, again, this just is highlighting the fact that we're not actually addressing the problem. You know, we have a gashy, a huge, let's say, cut your fingers off and the Band-Aids are running out of the box. And so it's just more taxpayer money going to insurance companies. Again, like Representative Katizawatuna said, without any kind of information on the return on investment, we're saying that this is going to cost a bunch on the front end, but not looking at how much we're saving taxpayers on the back end. And so, again, more money from taxpayers to insurance companies. And if they can't afford to cover these, you know, few things, maybe the CEOs could take a little bit of a pay cut. And, you know, I ask the insurance companies again, what do you do here? What value are you adding to Minnesota? So that I would suggest a no vote. Thank you.
Representative Perryman, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you for all the great conversation. And I would love to, as I said, that move forward so that our whole body can vote on it and we can all represent all our Minnesota constituents who we do get voted by. And yes, I really think we have a great bill here in front of us that will keep the smart, common sense mandates that we do have, and then just kind of give us pause as legislators before we say yes to all the mandates that come forward. So thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, Representative Perryman. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 400 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, a roll call being requested. The chair votes aye.
Chair Cagle?
No.
Vice Chair Perryman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Elkins?
No.
Representative Allen?
Yes.
Representative Buck?
No.
Representative Cha?
No.
Representative Davids?
Yes.
Representative Dotsa?
Yes.
Representative Falconer?
No.
Representative Finke?
No.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Heintzman?
Yes.
Representative Hewitt?
Abstain.
Representative Hewitt, abstain. Representative Katizawatuna?
No.
Representative Kresha?
Yes.
Representative Reimer?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Van Binsbergen?
Yes.
Representative West?
Aye.
The vote being 10 ayes and 9 nays, one would think that that means that the bill passed, but under the rules of the joint agreement, we need to have at least 11 votes on here, and on this or any other vote that we would have as it relates to matters. In other words, if all 10 members in one caucus voted for it, it would still require a member of the opposite caucus to vote for it, at least one of them. And so even though, again, on the simple face majority, it is 10-9, the motion does not prevail and the bill does not move forward. All right, with that, we have our next order of business, and it's House File 4138, and Chair Scott has that bill relative to some social media platform changes and how they may affect minors. And members, you will recall that very, very early on this session, we had spent some significant time talking about AI and social media and access and working on things. This bill is a step in that direction and has been vetted out by a number of other committees, and we are its final stop before it goes to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Representative Scott, I will move House File 4138 before the committee to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And with that, you have a DE3 amendment, and that is an author's amendment?
Yes, that's right, Mr. Chair.
All right, I will do this. I will ask you before we move the amendment, Chair Scott, to briefly describe the bill, what's in the DE, and then we'll adopt the DE, and then you can continue on with your comments. And I know you have a few testifiers here, and there certainly will probably be some discussion from the committee. So I think that's probably the easiest way for us to address this right now is to have you tell us about the bill, tell us what's in the DE, and then we'll adopt and bring it forward to the committee.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It's a pleasure to be before you this morning. My committee used to meet this early, and I forget how difficult it is, so kudos to all of you for showing up.
Chair Kegel, and I hear about it quite regularly from folks.
I used to
mostly
as well.
From me.
Yeah. I'll first make some remarks then on the bill, and then we'll move to the changes in the DE3, if that's all right then. Social media is consuming our lives. We know that social media platforms are addictive by design, and that is reflected in teen usage of social media. The Office of the U.S. Surgeon General reports that 95% of 13 to 17-year-olds are on social media platforms, and a 2023 Gallup poll found that teens spend on average 20% of their day on social media platforms. In the 2025 Minnesota Student Survey, nearly one in five Minnesota high school students reported being on social media between the hours of 12 a.m. and 5 a.m., five school nights a week. Social media platforms target ads and content to users based on a variety of factors, including the estimate of age determined after spent time on the platform. I can't think of another product for which teens sign a contract, especially one which takes on average 20% of their day. When teens enter into this contract, the platforms monetize and sell the minors' data to other platforms for targeted commercial advertising. I've seen one estimate that said it's an $11 billion a year industry. As parents and as lawmakers, we should not be okay with that. We have the power to enforce consumer protections around products used by Minnesotans, especially for kids. My remarks highlight just a brief overview of how youth are being exploited by unfair trade practices, and the legislature should require responsibility from platforms to protect Minnesota youth online. House File 3418 seeks to mitigate some of these practices with a twofold approach. Number one, covered social media platforms as defined by our bill as platforms which made $1 billion in advertising revenues worldwide in one or more of the three preceding years must use the same age estimating technology currently being used to target content and ads to instead protect youth. If age estimation technology predicts that a user is 15 or under, verifiable parental consent must be obtained to have an account with the platform. Verifiable parental consent already exists under 1998 federal law, the Child Online Privacy Protection Act, or COPPA. The implementing regulations have also been outlined by the Federal Trade Commission. Either a parent or legal guardian can give verifiable parental consent. Number two with this bill, if verifiable parental consent is given, the user experience for youth must be different from an adult account user experience. No targeted commercial advertising to the youth user. No addictive features present in the user experience, including infinite scroll, autoplay video, or metrics displayed, such as how many likes on an account. This bill does not ban users from having social media.
Instead, it requires a parent or guardian to approve of the social media contractual agreements. It also requires a different user experience for youth. And then I will move on to the A3 and the changes that we made. Based on some feedback in the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee, we made the following changes. On the social media definition, we updated the social media definition with a reference to existing statute, which is, and I know Representative Elkins will be familiar with this because we're going to hear another bill this afternoon in my this morning in my committee, but 325M. Just to ensure that we are not unintentionally bringing in other industries. This bill is to protect youth on social media. That's what this bill is about. Ongoing responsibility to check age. Under this bill, platforms have an ongoing responsibility to ensure that accounts for child users have obtained verifiable parental consent. My bill requires a couple of checks when a user initially sets up an account. And after those initial checks, we amended the language to require checks just every 6 months following to ensure that no youth slips through the cracks. We changed the requirement for a user to input their birth date, and now it just is their birth month and year. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will hand it back over to you.
Thank you, and members, I think we will adopt the DE3 amendment, and thank you for your run-through on the bill and the changes that were in the DE amendment. I will move the DE3 amendment for the bill author to get it in the form that the bill author wishes. So I move the DE3 to House File 4138. All those in favor of adopting the DE to get the bill in the form the bill author wishes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. And with that, if there are any other final comments that you have before we go to testifiers, I'll certainly have the chance to continue to react, Representative Scott, but I think maybe we'll move to testifiers if you're okay with that.
Yeah, that'll be fine. I just want to say that, you know, we are willing to make changes as we go along to make the bill better. And again, this bill is focused on design, not on content. I think that's an important piece to this discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Scott. And our first testifier is Maggie Henge, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. If Maggie will come to the testifying table. Good morning and welcome. If you will state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Driscoll, Chair Cagle, and members of the committee. My name is Maggie Henge, and I am here from the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota, to share our support for House File 4138. Please vote yes. Social media platforms are designed to addict. Cited in the U.S. Surgeon General's report from 2023, nearly one-third of social media use may be attributed to self-control challenges. People are staying plugged in longer and for more and more often than they attend. The platform's business models are working, but not to our benefit. We should not sit back and let big tech capture the lives of our children. This bill is not about age verification. It does not require young users to provide their own personal data, and it does not ban children from social media, nor is it focused on the content that the users see while they're online. This bill is really focused on eliminating the addictive design model of social media products while giving parents a tool to keep their kids safe online. Nowhere else do we allow minors to enter a contract, yet they are allowed to sign over their data to big tech, and sometimes without their parents even knowing. The kids then become the products off of which the platforms can profit. When a platform or experience is free, the user is the product, and that's us. While they may suggest otherwise, social media companies are already incentivized to determine key demographics of their users, their age, location, or even interests, so they can sell targeted advertisements at a higher premium. Instead of using this technology to lure young users into staying on the product longer, they could employ that same age estimation technology to help identify child users and ensure they have the parental consent needed to be on the platform. Part of keeping kids safe online includes involving parents. When a parent can consent to their child's account creation, they're informed about where their child is spending their time online and can have tailored conversations about online safety. Just this week, a jury in New Mexico established that Meta's platforms are not safe for kids and are instead designed to exploit them. Similarly, in Los Angeles, a jury found that YouTube and Instagram are addictive by design, which is harming kids. At the legislative level, Minnesota too can step out and urge these platforms to protect youth online by passing House File 4138. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Our next testifier is Gabe Nolan, followed by Ruby Eichenbrook, excuse me. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the committee. We'll give you, just have you do a quick mic test on that. Sometimes that one works and sometimes it doesn't.
Great. Does this work?
Can you all hear okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, co-chairs and members. My name is Gabe Nallen, and I'm a student here in Minnesota. I've seen how social media consumes teens' lives. The platforms are designed to keep us on the apps constantly, with addictive features like infinite scroll and autoplaying video. When anyone, let alone a kid, begins to scroll, it's hard to stop. Not only can harmful content be served to them, but they can get easily addicted to scrolling, finding themselves relying on a device for human interaction rather than their own abilities. Kids get addicted to scrolling, watching, liking, and sharing, and do this so consistently that they find it hard to break the cycle. Because I have seen how harmful this type of addictive platform is, I have made the decision to quit social media indefinitely. When kids and adults spend more time on social media, they find it harder to do simple interactions with humans like eye contact. Social media is leading us down a dangerous path, not one towards human connection, but one towards weaker relationships with those around us. As a student, I just last week urged my peers in my public speaking class to take breaks from social media because of its harms to students in particular. In these years where we teens are developing into adults, we need to be developing in-person relationships. Social media instead keeps us online by making us addicted to the product. The platforms also push content from people we don't know and can encourage us to buy products that we never even thought about before. They make money by keeping teens on the apps, consistently using the fact that their apps produce dopamine hits in our brains to make sure we want to come back for more. In the end, we feel more disconnected from real life and real people than we did before. Parents need to be aware when a contract is signed by their teen with a multi-billion dollar tech company. There needs to be more accountability for these companies, specifically because they have kids as customers. This bill is a step in the right direction to protect teens from addictive features of social media. Please vote yes for House File 4138. Thank you.
I do have a question for you, and Representative Hewitt, you are on the list. Is it for the testifier or for the bill overall?
It's for the overall.
Okay. You made a comment that just struck my curiosity. You said that you talked on a presentation in your public speaking class, I believe it was, to your peers about this topic. Did they have reactions for you or stories that you could maybe anecdotally quickly tell us about their thoughts and how it's affected them?
Yeah, I think most people agree that social media is very harmful, and it's an easy issue to say that we all struggle with addicting or getting addicted to this type of media. But it's one thing to actually take action against that, and that's a thing that I was encouraging others to actually do rather than just talking about the harms, doing something about it, taking breaks and taking steps to actually cut it out of our lives rather than just acknowledging that it's a problem.
Mr. Lolan, close captioning, if you take a look around the room, there's a bunch of people on their social media right now, too. Thank you for your testimony. Hang by, because some members may have some questions. Appreciate you being here this morning. Our next testifier is Ruby Eichenbrook, followed by Tracer Alhindi. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Ruby Eichenbrock and I'm a high schooler in Minnesota. Thank you, committee, for allowing me to testify.
Could I just have you get just a little bit closer or pull the microphone?
Sorry.
There you go.
Is this better? Okay. Should I start over?
Yeah, go ahead and state your name and then start over.
My name is Ruby Eichenbrock and I am a high schooler in Minnesota. Thank you, committee, for allowing me to testify in support of House File 4138. I would like to use my teenage years to enjoy the process of growing into a responsible, self-disciplined person. This is very hard when constantly being tempted to waste time online. I have YouTube and Pinterest accounts, and when I start scrolling, it's hard to stop. The platforms send ads targeted for me based on what I have been watching. The algorithm keeps feeding me videos to keep me on, which benefits the social media companies at the expense of teens' development. This makes it very hard to practice self-discipline and use my time wisely. I could simply stay away from these platforms, but I find them so helpful for schoolwork and communicating with friends that I would like to continue to use them, but my experience would be greatly improved if I had the help to say no to endless scrolling and autoplay videos that I did not ask for. This temptation to stay online is not limited to my schoolwork responsibilities, but also shows up in real-life social interactions with other teens. For example, I play team sports, and during more than one team bonding events, some of my teammates are not participating in real life, and they instead choose to be on their phones scrolling on social media, which makes me discouraged. Since they don't participate in these team bonding events, it's harder to be a team and lift each other up or build relationships outside of the sport. Please help us teens to work towards growing into mature and responsible adults. Please vote yes on House File 4138 to protect kids from the addictive aspects of social media. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us this morning. Much appreciated. And our final testifier, Tracer Hindi. And I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that close enough.
You are very close. It's Tacier.
Okay.
You're adding an extra R, but that's
sorry.
Okay.
No
worries.
I feel like I'm a Wheel of Fortune, apparently. So, welcome to the committee, and thank you if you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you for having me. My name is Tacier El-Hindi, and I'm a member of the National Action Network and the president of the Minnesota chapter here in the Twin Cities. I want to start by saying that we have a shared goal of ensuring the safety and mental well-being of Minnesota's youth and youth across the nation. And while we agree with many intentions of this bill, we also believe that its current language creates unintended consequences that will disproportionately harm Black, Brown, and low-income communities. HF 4138 requires social media platforms to implement commercially reasonable age estimation and verification methods, which historically translates to the collection of sensitive data through government IDs and or biometric scans, and technologies that rely on AI and facial analysis, which have documented higher error rates for people with darker skin tones. For communities who are already over-policed and over-surveilled, collecting more personal data is a civil rights concern. We worry this data will be stored, sold, or accessible to law enforcement in creating a digital paper trail for youth simply seeking community online. Additionally, this could lead to systemic exclusion of Black youth from digital spaces due to technical mismatches based on those documented error rates. This, along with the mandate for verifiable parental consent for users under 15, it sounds protective, but it ignores the digital divide that already exists in many Minnesota households. For parents working multiple jobs, those with limited English proficiency, or households without traditional credit cards, often used for verification, these requirements act as a barrier. Many youth in our community find essential support systems, educational resources, and social justice movements through these platforms. By creating high friction entry, we risk cutting off vulnerable youth from the very tools they use to organize and seek help. Algorithms are often marginalized, often help marginalized voices find an audience that traditional media ignores. If platforms are forced to strip away personalized feeds to avoid litigation, it may become harder for Black-led movements, local artists, and minority-owned businesses to reach their own communities. This bill allows for civil actions that could lead to defensive filtering by tech companies. To avoid lawsuits, platforms may over-censor content related to sensitive but necessary topics like racial justice, police reform, reproductive health under the guise of protecting minors. We urge the committee to reconsider the age verification mandates and instead focus on comprehensive digital literacy programs and stricter data broker regulations that protect all Minnesotans without creating systems of surveillance. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Hang by in case there are some member questions, if you would. Okay. But, yep, thank you again. That concludes the list of people who have pre-signed to testify. Is there anyone else here today that would like to speak to the matter before the committee, House File 4138, as amended? Seeing none and hearing none, I have two members on the list for questions, and we'll start with Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Scott, for bringing this bill. Just overnight, we heard of a terrible, I mean, a humongous lawsuit filed against Meta that became in the plaintiff's order that they favored this and what it caused damages to her. My only problem with this, and this is an ongoing problem through history, right? I mean, even the Bible itself, when it was first printed, was only given the interpretation by the church leaders, and they regulated it. And today, we're trying to regulate a whole new superhighway here. Bad actors come into this. This can go beyond the borders of the country even. You, as the judiciary chair, how do you see this being something we could do through the state laws and stuff like that? I mean, isn't this more of a something that has to come out of the feds? Or help me out here, because that's the one area that when I look at this, I say, how do we do this? How do we keep Wisconsin internet stuff coming from Minnesota or whatever? So I don't know if you have an answer for this, but I'm really curious about that.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the really good question. And we see how long it takes Congress to enact on anything. Just ask Representative Elkins. That's why he's bringing the bills he's bringing, because Congress is not doing it. And so we have a responsibility to the kids of the state of Minnesota. So this is an attempt to protect them. So I think it's really important, again, to reiterate that. And as a chair of judiciary and civil law and data practices falls in line with that too, I want to speak also to the amount of information that we may or may not be collecting on the student or on the parent giving the consent. There are verifiable ways for parents to give that consent without showing picture IDs, without having the companies hold on to that information. There are consent forms they can sign and send electronically. There are text messages and phone calls that are already established ways of enacting the federal COPPA laws, so that has to do with verification. So I want to clear that up, that we are not gathering more and more data on these kids. It's the social media companies that are doing that right now. The age, this is not age verification, this is age estimation, and there's a difference. With verification, you do have to hand over more personal data. With this, we're going to be using the algorithms that these social media companies are already using to estimate the age so that they can target the ads, so that they can target the videos to these kids. So I think this is our responsibility as Minnesota legislators to enact a law like this so that we're protecting our kids. And then once this is enacted, the whole design features that our kids are going to be seeing online are going to change differently. They're not going to be targeted with ads. Infinite scroll is not going to be a thing. And so there's some changes design-wise, and that's why Representative Bonner signed on to this bill, is because it attacks the design feature, not the content.
Members, we now have 5 members on the list, and we have 3 other orders of business that are of interest to the committee. I would like to take a vote, and we will vote at on or before 9:40 this morning. This is about 15 more minutes for folks to be able to ask questions on the bill. Again, we do have some other business that we would need to attend to before we wrap up on third deadline. With that, we're going to go to Representative Dotsmith, followed by Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Scott. You had we actually had a discussion earlier where testifier had actually mentioned concern about data being shared. Can you explain a little bit about the data retained and through the parental consent process and what modifications have been done there?
Chair Scott, if you could briefly answer Representative Dotsmith's question.
Sure. There's already established ways for parental consent established in COPPA. Some of those include electronically an email, emailing back and forth a consent form, or fax. I know faxing. I know some of the people don't even know what a fax machine is, but faxing it back and forth. There are ways to do this, and in fact, this bill says that information that they might use to verify if somebody does produce an ID, that this bill says that it has to be destroyed after it's used for verification. But the social media companies, it's really important a point here. Right now, for kids 13 and under, they're supposed to be getting, they're supposed to be verifying the age. They're supposed to be getting consent from the parents. And so what are they doing now? And I would say that they're probably not doing what they are by law supposed to do on a national level. So this bill is needed on the state level. And the information that is kept is the consent form. I mean, it can be that small.
Yeah, Representative Dotts, a very short follow-up.
Okay.
All right, Representative Smith, followed by Representative Cha. Representative
Thank you, Chair. I do have three quick questions. I think I can get them out rather quickly. Representative Scott, I think the intent behind this is a good bill, right? Trying to protect our children, protect their data in this digital world. Kind of the tension here I have with this bill is that the way that we are protecting our children's data is to require the platforms to get data from our children and make conclusions on them, which I know is like, it's a hard thing to square. So like subdivision 2, I just want to read this language because I'm somewhat uncomfortable with this. That when a new account holder has been on the covered social media platform for 25 hours or more, the covered social media platform has 14 days to estimate the age of the account holder using reasonable efforts, taking into consideration available technology and the data in the possession of the covered social media platform. And then if they're 80% or greater, sure, then they take action. Can you maybe just speak, and this is a real tension I have, I haven't like decided on this bill or anything, of the idea of the way to protect the data is to have them collect that data and make a decision on it unilaterally as this platform. Is that making clear the tension kind of on that idea?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thanks for the question. There are already, so for kids that already have these accounts, and that they would require the parental permission. The algorithms are already there. The social media companies are already estimating their age. There's nothing, we can't put that genie back in the bottle, okay? But what it's saying is now you have to have parental consent, and it is estimated that within about 25 hours of, I guess, a person being online, that the social media companies, through their algorithms, can already really closely predict the age of the user. So this is nothing new. We're asking them to use that to help verify the age. For new account holders, so if someone is 14 and they want to start using social media for the first time, the parents give consent. So when that kid signs up for social media or opens an account, it's going to see a completely different product, right? It's not going to have the age. It's not going to have all those dangerous data collecting pieces to that account. It's going to look much different. The design of it will be different.
I really do appreciate that answer. And I'm just struggling with, I understand the genie out of the bottle, like, but do we put that genie in our tax code? I'm just undecided, but I think this is a good discussion to be having, to be quite honest. So the other two questions are just like clarifying questions, so I'll ask them both and then I'll be done because we are closed on time here. The first is I want to ask about this $1 billion threshold in ad revenue. Do you have an idea of exactly how many companies that would cover? I'd imagine you have a list or close to an account list of like Meta, a handful of others that would cross that threshold. And then my second one, and I'm glad you're the chair of Judiciary, this is not an area of expertise for me. Could you talk about enforcement, making sure that traditionally big tech, even when we make laws, try to skirt them and there hasn't been a lot of ways to hold them accountable? Can you talk to the accountability piece in this bill? Thank you.
Representative Scott, again, I'm just going to ask you to kind of brief because we do have four members on there and I do want to get this taken care of for
you. I'm going to answer the second question first. I'm going to have my testifier come up and answer the first question. The second question has to do with enforcement. If you want to come on up while I'm talking. And this bill allows for the Attorney General to enforce this. And we know, I mean, we may love or not love the Attorney General of the state, but you can say this about him. He is going after social media. He did a report a couple years ago that really talked about the harms of social media to our youth. And so he has gone, he's gone against Meta. He's gone against so TikTok, I think. So I think that that's where the enforcement lies, and he's already proven that that's something that he is willing to do.
And we'll go to your testifier for Representative Smith's last question. If you'll just go ahead and introduce yourself for the record again, and then I can ask Representative Smith to repeat the question if you need to. Okay.
Thanks, Chair Driscoll. Maggie Hingy. Representative Smith, 95% of kids' time online is spent on the biggest platforms that have over $1 billion in ad revenue. So that list would be YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, and X. And Reddit is creeping up there too. YouTube has $40 billion in ad revenue, TikTok 33, Instagram about $50 billion. So all of these platforms that I just listed have billions of dollars in ad revenue, so they far exceed that threshold. Thank you.
Very good. Our next member question comes from Representative Cha, followed by Representative Elkins. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair. Just some comments here. Thank you, Peggy, for working on this. We cannot wait for Congress, so I applaud you for bringing this forward. And we are behind. We've been behind since the introduction of the Dow modem. And so I want to thank you for that. You know, we need to really think about this because at the speed and the rate of the data centers and the computation that's happening now, these algorithms are getting more sophisticated day by day as they're learning. We're building these data centers to do what? To process data, you know? And they're computing at a pace that we cannot comprehend. And what that means is that our children, our families don't have tools. And so we as a state need to protect our consumers, our children, and those within our borders. So I applaud you for bringing this forward. And I know this is just the beginning, but we need to start somewhere. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cha. Representative Elkins, followed by Representative Reimer. Representative Elkins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, want to thank you for sticking with this one. I know both you and Representative Bonner have been working on this issue for years. It's really, really hard. But I think the, you know, as I read through the DE, I can see how much work has gone into this. And I think the idea of basically using the information that the social media companies themselves are compiling in order to target advertising at kids as the criteria for determining age is ingenious. So I applaud you for this. And also to another previous question, I just want to observe that I worked in the general data privacy area for about 6 years now, that there is a whole collection of state legislators around the country who collaborate on this kind of legislation. And I think you would find that the bills like this one, as it is evolving, either exist or being worked on by legislators collaborating across states and states across the country. So by the time the dust settles on this issue, you'll probably see a dozen states with bills like this.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Reimer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Scott, for bringing this bill forward. I find myself at an interesting kind of nexus in this conversation because I own a digital marketing agency that works with real estate agents. We have about 300 clients. We spend about $500,000 a month on meta advertising on behalf of our clients. And with real estate agents, it's really interesting because during the first Trump administration, HUD came out and basically had a ruling that said you're marketing housing and you're using discriminatory practices to market housing. So after that ruling came down, Meta, the platform, changed how it worked, right? And I know this is moving on to ways and means, but every time that we actually impose something on the consumer level, I'd like to see some work done on this bill, some more work that puts more pressure on the platforms, because I do have similar concerns that have been shared so far about potential free speech lawsuits, a couple of other things, just like what, like redundancies in what platforms are already doing because of pressure. Like, I guess my question would be maybe for the testifier too, is what does this bill do? Like, I know there's Instagram teen accounts, which has data protection measures that the platforms have self-initiated. I think TikTok's doing something very similar. How does this bill not be redundant to what the platforms are doing from pressure they've already had put on them?
Representative Reimer, did you want Chair Scott or the testifier on that one?
Either one. Chair Scott, did you want to take that?
Okay. So one of the reasons that we have 15 and under, we'll start there, for this bill, and the social media companies wanted us to switch to 13 because that's kind of the national number. We think that's way too low. And so we want to I don't think there's going to be overlap in that area, at least, because we're raising the age. Again, this bill, we are trying to address the free speech concerns by focusing on design. And as you said, HUD said these are unfair trade practices, and the platforms had to change the way they do things. They had to change their design, right? Mm-hmm. That's what this bill is trying to get at. And I don't know if the testifier has any additional comments. Go ahead.
Yeah, thoughts or comments?
Yeah, Maggie Haney for the record. Thank you, Representative Reimer. One thing I'll just say on Instagram for Kids is they did put some protections in place, but a study found that 30 of the 47 safety measures promoted by Instagram for Kids were either ineffective or no longer available. 20 of the features could be circumvented or evaded in 3 minutes or less. And then content, not that this is about content filters, but content filters and other things that happen at the system level don't always work within the apps. So while they say they're trying to do something, we want to just compel them even further to have to stick to that and actually help kids.
Representative Reimer, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just maybe one last comment. Yeah, I totally understand, willing to kind of vote this through and work with you all on it. And mm-hmm. for our testifiers, our teen testifiers today, it's what I want to remind people, and you included, is that everyone still has personal responsibility. You are the master of your own domain. You get to determine whether or not you put your phone up or put your phone down. And I just want to make sure that we're not creating legislation that is the role of a parent. So thank you.
Very good. That is the list of member testifier or member questions. We'll go to Co-Chair Kegel for her thoughts, and then we'll go to you, Representative Scott, for the wrap-up. Co-Chair Kegel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Scott, for bringing this bill. I guess, you know, just one of the concerns that we might have is the use of the facial technology to estimate age. And so especially we see that, you know, it can fail people. You know, especially people of color, transgender, non-binary, people with disabilities, they might be subject to kind of the false negatives. And so if we could just maybe take a look at that and figure out how to, you know, address some of those concerns. And then I just kind of wonder about the technology itself, if it's ready. It's kind of in that infancy stage. But other than those few things, I think, you know, this is a good bill to be moving out of committee. So thank you very much.
And I will just comment, too. I know that you have worked long and hard, Representative Scott, on data practice stuff and the Chapter 13 things that are out there and working on this. And you have not let rain or snow or sleet of night deter you from working on this with your partners, and it's bipartisan, and so we very much appreciate that work and that effort, and I think we might actually be able to get something across the line to help folks in the work that you and Representative Bonner and others have done. So with that, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the really good questions and discussion, and I just want to address the facial piece, and this bill does not require our students send in a picture of themselves to estimate their age. That's not what this is. This is algorithm driven and parent driven. So members, I just appreciate your support as we continue to work on this important piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott. And members, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 4138, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Representative Scott, you are on your way.
Thank you.
Members, we have three orders of business here that we want to take up, and I think I'll ask Representative Patizo Atun to head to the testifiers table, and as she is doing that, I'll explain what we have in front of us. If House File 4118 looks very familiar to you, it should. It is the credit union insurance bill that we had passed and worked on in the committee. And as Representative Katiza Watun had said, she will continue working on this. And a heart attack was apparently had by everyone when a 51-page amendment came to a two-page bill in Ways and Means, and they fired it right back to us. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chair Katiza Watun to explain what just happened.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much. That was a very good overview. House File 4118, when we heard originally in this committee, we had a good discussion. Representative Allen is a co-author on this bill. We knew that there were multiple references as we
first presented in the committee due to the hard work of House research and what seemed to be a few references sprinkled throughout state statute turned out to be 51 pages of cross-references. So the Ways and Means team decided it would be best to send it back to us, the commerce experts, just to make sure that there weren't any hijinks happening. There is peace in the valley. The department has confirmed that this is only technical. The advocates are on board, and I would appreciate support of this technical amendment so that we can move it on to the general register.
All right. Members, is there any question to the A1 author's amendment that is 25 times bigger than the bill? Seeing none and hearing none, I will move the A1 before the committee. All those in favor of adopting the A1 to get the bill in the shape that the author likes, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, Representative Katiza Watun, I do not have any member questions. We'll give you the final comment.
Great. Thanks for the support on the first time that we passed it. While the bill has certainly gotten longer, it has not gotten more complicated, and I would appreciate everyone's support.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watun. And with that, all those in favor of, I've already renewed my motion that House File 4118 now as amended be re-referred to the General Register so that Ways and Means can't send it back to us a second time for additional work. And so with that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our final order of official business, as I said, there was three. There's one official and one not official piece of business ahead of us. Since yesterday, we were running short of time, and we were working on a couple of bills. The Hansen House File 4203 did not make it out of committee yesterday. And with consultation with myself, Co-Chair Kegel, with Representative West, and I know that Representative Hansen's been involved in this, and others, we're going to be bringing this bill back before the committee. And what our goal is going to be is we're going to consider taking the DE1 amendment that was added on to the Hansen bill, taking that off and sending just the as introduced Hansen bill to Ways and Means, and let Representative Hansen, Representative West, and others who have an interest in the cannabis industry continue to work and come up with something that will be added on then as maybe the final amendment and agreement for cannabis 2026 out of the House in the Committee on Ways and Means. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Chair Kegel for her thoughts and comments this morning as well. Chair Kegel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, you know, we want to continue to work on this. We want to actually, you know, get some good policy done. And so I would move to reconsider the DE1 amendment.
Representative Kegel moves to reconsider the DE1 amendment to House File 4203. Discussion, members, to the motion to reconsider the DE amendment to remove it from House File 4203. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to mention for the record that, you know, everything that was amended into yesterday's bill was the agency bills as we had discussed them with the addition of Representative Allen's bill. So that is what the DE1 had included. That was just really combining a lot of the bills that had been separated in order to make it easy for folks of the public to see that. So I just wanted to be clear about what was in the DE1. I know I talked very fast yesterday, and sometimes it doesn't always gather. So I just wanted to clarify that we hadn't added anything new, different, or you know, that was controversial or anything like that, and we had planned to make sure we could continue adding in other items that had been negotiated once we got to Ways. We really just ran out of nonpartisan staff time in order to bring in some more of that, and so trying to balance that. So I just wanted to be clear about why we're pulling that out. There was nothing particular about that particular language that came up yesterday that was, you know, problematic or anything like that. So thank you.
Thank you for the clarification, Representative Hansen. And it is the season, right? deadlines and the nonpartisan staff working very, very diligently to get these things taken care of. So with that, all those in favor of the reconsideration and removal of the DE1 amendment to House File 4203 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
And so now we are back to the original language on that. And Representative Hansen, I will go ahead and move House File 4203 as unamended. It's not the technical language. Pause for 1 second. Ms. Fompu, how would be the best way to move this?
I would just say 40. Chair numbers. I would just say 4203 as introduced or.
Okay. We have then before us House File 4203 back in its original shape as introduced. And this is going to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a quick clarification about the handout yesterday. A lot of my members were confused about that. And just the email that was, or the copy of the letter that was sent, the last line in there was actually something that was added by Representative West. And so just want to make sure that we're clear that, you know, the offer that went out was that, was from Representative Hansen minus that last line in the handout.
Thank you for the clarification. And so members, with that, I move again, renew my motion that House File 4203, which is now back in its original state, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The
no.
Motion prevails, and the bill is now on its way to Ways and Means. As I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation today, this will be the last regularly scheduled committee meeting for this biennium. And I want to take a few minutes and also offer Co-Chair Cagle the opportunity to share some final comments on the committee and reflection over the last 2 years. And I will go ahead and I'll just get started. I know that last session when we got started, it was the weirdest of weird things, right? We were all like 67, 67, right, in this whole thing.
You're so hip, Mr. Chair.
I am retiring and I'm looking for other work, right? I'm looking for other work, right? So with I want to let you know that even though things kind of got crazy because of where things were, I made the promise to this committee and to at that time co-chair her that we will work together and we will be professional, we will be transparent, and we will work for the people in the state of Minnesota. And we finished up work last year. We did a lot of great things. And then with the departure from the Minnesota legislature of co-chair her, now Mayor her, we had co-chair Cagle, who's been on commerce, who is back on commerce, and she came to me and said, how do we continue the good work of what was happening in this committee? And I said, here's what we did in the past. And she said, I love it, and continue on. I don't know if you realize the volume of work that this committee has actually done this year and the good work that we've done. Co-Chair Cagle and I have been together working on this. We meet regularly with our staff folks. We have engaged with the Senate and their staff folks from the Commerce Committee to make sure that we are doing good work of the people, to line up as many bills as standalone bills that we can, and again, working on things. Contrary to what people say, work can be done in an environment like this, and you have done and continue to do beyond what my expectations could have ever been for this committee. So I very much appreciate that. We've had no blowouts. We know that there are things that one side wants that the other's not going to like, and vice versa. But we've always handled that above the fray and very professionally. And I am very appreciative of both sides for doing that. That's what the people have sent us here to do. And this committee, in my estimation, has done that. And before this committee's lights go up in the morning, we have the pages in here who are setting this room up, and the page team. We have members of the sergeant's office who are out making sure that things are ready to go. We have the state patrol policing the area and coming in and out of here to make sure that there is order and that everyone is safe in this environment. We have our nonpartisan staff who has been fantastic to work with over the past few years. We have our partisan staff. Alex Wheeler, didn't know who he was before, right, met him, great guy to work with. Sam O'Neill, didn't know him before, great guy to work with. Chair Cagle, knew you before, still a great person to work with. And on our side, Ben Fries, who replaced Jonathan Cotter, who has left the legislature, great guy to work with. And the newest member of our team, and I would say on the GOP side, Rookie of the Year, is Jesse. He's been just a fantastic help and addition to the team. And so, again, I want you to revel in this moment that you have done a great job and great work. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Eric.
Oh, Eric. Eric.
Eric Anderson, our DFL researcher. Boy. Always a go-to guy.
Dang it, anyhow.
But I just really want to echo what Chair O'Driscoll said. This has been an amazing committee. It's been wonderful to work with, and you know, I've gotten to know Chair O'Driscoll over the past few weeks, and you know, I keep joking he's my new best friend. So, and maybe it's not a joke anymore after Sweeney's.
After Sweeney's, it won't. But hey, I really think that this committee has been a role model for the legislature, and I think Chair O'Driscoll, your leadership has been very, very welcomed, and I really appreciate your transparency, your honesty, and your availability. And so I think like those are three things that make a legislator successful. And so I just really very much appreciate it. And I really hope that folks can take what we've done this past year and move it forward. You know, take this style of leadership and move it forward, because we're gonna be gone. But this kind of transparency is something that the public expects. And by being transparent, we can regain trust in government and the work that we do. And so I just, again, I want to thank all the staff, Pages, Alex, Sam. They are my brains. They make me look so smart. And it's been just a joy to work with Ben and Jesse as well. And so I really do appreciate it. And Karen, thank you as well. I always get to whisper secrets to her.
So Eric, haha, you're not the only one.
Yeah, okay.
I forgot my LA and my CLA. So Karen, I am so sorry. This is what happens when we try to do the right thing.
But it really has been great, and so I do appreciate it, and I hope that this kind of work does move forward into the next session. So thank you very much.
And again, Karen, you have done a fabulous job in supporting and making this work as well. And Chair Kegel, I want to also, you know, compliment you. You know, when I put that on the table, you said, let's try it and let's see how it works. And you have been available, and we've worked together as a team, and there have been things. It's like, be honest, where are you at? And I'll be honest, and we'll get stuff done. And again, thank you to everyone and the folks who have been here in front of the committee. But I think we put out somewhere in the neighborhood, we figured like 17 or 18 solid bipartisan bills that the Senate is working. They got to work overtime. They got to be here tomorrow. We got our work done on Thursday. Yeah. So, but they will be lining up as many other bills as they can with us. So again, thank you all for that. And with that, we are adjourned.